Welcome to our second Moose. A Moose is a massive open online session as opposed to a massive open online course. Henry Mintzberg is going to be leading the session this morning. If anyone out there is watching this, there are three different ways. If you have a question or a comment, there is a feedback button. Whoops. There's a feedback button at the bottom of your screen. You can type a question in there, and we'll post the question live in class. Alternatively, you can send a text to me at the number that's on the screen, at the phone number that's on the screen, or you can send an email, and we'll be monitoring all of it. This will also be recorded so that you can listen to it or watch it later. If you want to see any of the websites associated with the type of pedagogy you're going to see in the classroom this morning, you can look at the IMPM website or the IMHL website. And finally, before I introduce Henry, there's a website on there too for the IMHL Alumni Organization, which is planning its second reunion retreat in Chile in April, to which all the IMHL alums and the current students will be invited, anyone who wants to come. So in terms of just saying a couple words about what we did yesterday and how it's related to what we're going to do today and bringing into the rest of the module, we tried to set up the day yesterday to look at perhaps different perspectives in the way we think about analysis. So while the focus was on evidence versus experience, I think the greater focus that we hope you'll bring to the rest of the module is on how we think about analysis, and that analysis has it has a quantitative perspective, it has a qualitative perspective, it has a perspective that might mix and match the two or be somewhere in the middle. And so we want you to be cognizant of this as we go through the module. What we're going to do this morning is to focus on organizing or on organizations. So I don't want to preempt any thing that Henry's going to say, but in the course of the morning, we'll hope you'll be thinking about what type of organization is your organization, where you're working, the organization where you might be working, perhaps an organization where you've worked before. What type of organization is it? How do people in such an organization work? How do you work in that organization? And to bring a little link back to the Moose or Moose that we're doing today, Henry's also going to be talking about a cow at some point. So welcome to our morning, and welcome to Henry Mintzberg.
Okay. Thanks, and welcome to whoever is out there. I want to make one clarification. This session is not about organizing Henry Mintzberg. Okay, that's not possible, although Santa tries very hard. It's about organizing, and I'm doing it. So if you have a psychological problem, or you're concerned about your own development, or you're worried about kind of who you are, or you have an identity crisis, or whatever it is, and you go into a bookstore, and you say, you know, I'd like to find a book that will help me, they'll point you to a shelf or a room with 500 books on how to deal with yourself, right? You just find all kinds of things. If you're worried about the economy, and you're worried about economic development, and you're worried about all kinds of economic issues, you can open any newspaper and find a dozen articles every day about economic issues. Okay? So at the base level, at the individual level, you've got enormous amounts of information. At the macro level, in terms of the whole economy, you've got enormous amounts of information. But in between, which is probably the single most important thing to most of us, which is where we live and work and function most of our lives, which is in organizations, we're in an absolutely primitive state. Okay? You're born in an organization called a hospital. You're buried by an organization called a funeral home. You're entertained by organizations. You're educated by organizations. You work in organizations. Just think about how much of your life revolves around organizations. And ask yourself, what you really understand, not understanding about who reports to who and organization charts and all that kind of silliness, but what you really understand about how these places function. Because if you don't understand how they function, then how can you deal with them? You're managing in them, you're working in them, you're reporting to managers, you are managers, you're chief executives, you're whatever it is you are. And we have this primitive state. So let me give you an example. We take two biologists. Consider two biologists. We'll take good Canadian examples. So one of them is studying bears, and the other is studying beavers. Okay? But they have no vocabulary to say bears and beavers. They have no words like that. The only word they have is mammal. Okay? Like we say organization. And what kind of organization? A consultant comes in, and you want to say, hey, you're treating us like one kind of an organization, but we're another kind of organization. Except we don't have words for it. So these two biologists get together, and they get into a discussion of where's the best place for a Canadian mammal to spend the winter. Okay, and one of them says, well, in caves. Obviously, mammals spend the winter in caves, because he studies bears. And the other one says, are you crazy? If the mammals, he studied beavers, if the mammals spend the winter in the caves, the wolves or the foxes are going to get in and kill them. They need to build wooden constructions so they can swim under the water and get away from their predators and spend the winter in these kind of wood kind of buildings they build. And of course they talk past each other because they have no vocabulary. And you talk past the consultant. Or I'll give you another example. A guy who ran a trucking company became dean of a business school. And he maintained that he could manage professors the way he managed truckers. So all the good trucker professors left, and all the bad ones stayed. Okay? Because he didn't understand that managing a trucking company is different from managing a business school. But how do you convey that to him? Okay? How do you convey that to him? So, look at this. You won't be able to read this, but you have it, and I'll read it all to you. Did I go through this with you about the orchestra conductor? I don't think I did. It's wonderful. So a young MBA was finally given the opportunity to apply his learning. He was told to go out and find an organization that he was unfamiliar with and study it and come back and make a report. So he chose a symphony orchestra. Because he had never been to a concert or studied a symphony orchestra. So he went out and he studied the symphony orchestra and he came back and this is what he reported. For considerable periods, the four oboe players had nothing to do. The number of oboes should therefore be reduced and the work spread more evenly over the whole concert program, thus eliminating peaks and valleys of activity. Okay, all 20 violins were playing identical notes. This would seem to be an unnecessary duplication, so you could really get rid of a lot of the violins. I mean, two or three can do it, eh? Why do you need 20 violins doing this? Obsolescence of equipment. He'd had an accounting course, and he knows that when equipment gets old, you write it off, and you buy brand new equipment. And there's this guy, this solo violinist, with this 300-year-old violin, Stradivarius, and if he had applied proper depreciation schedules, he could have thrown it in the garbage and gotten himself a brand new violin. Okay? Much effort was absorbed in the playing of demi-semi quavers, which seems to be an unnecessary refinement. It is recommended that all notes be rounded up to the nearest semi-quaver. If this were done, it would be possible to use trainees and lower grade operatives more extensively. I mean, get rid of the surgeons. Or at least in this case, get rid of the fancy violin players and bring in a lot cheaper staff. Finally, there seems to be too much repetition of some of the passages. Therefore, scores should be pruned to a considerable extent. I love this one. No useful purpose is served by repeating on the horns something which has already been handled by the strings. I mean, how many times can you say da 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 dum? I mean, isn't once enough? Don't you get it after the first time? So if all the redundant passages were eliminated, the whole concert could be reduced to 20 minutes and there'd be no need for an intermission. Okay, it's funny because it's an orchestra. If he had gone into a factory and said some of these things, it wouldn't be so funny. In fact, it happens all the time and it's not funny at all. And you've probably seen it in your own hospitals where somebody, or other healthcare organizations, where somebody comes in quite naive and figures they can reconfigure and reorganize everything because they're smarter than whoever's doing the work is, and so on. This is common, okay? This is common. And what are the orchestra, what's the orchestra people to say? Are they to say, well, we're bears and you studied beavers? They don't have a vocabulary other than to say we're an orchestra, therefore we're different. And then the kid comes back and says, well, everything's different. You know, they're all different. I mean, whatever it is, if it's a coffee stand, it's different. If it's a McDonald's, it's different. There's no vocabulary. We live in a world of organizations. How about this one? The Flying Funeral Directors of America. This is a real... I took this out of a book called The Encyclopedia of Association years ago. To create and further a common interest in flying and funeral service, to join together in case of mass disaster, and to improve flying safety. They can't make out their minds whether they want to bury them or help them. But so this is the kind of world we live in. So let me ask you a question. What species, if we go back to the biology metaphor, what species is your organization? You can pick anything that lives. Okay, like ants or hawks or elephants or bees or microbes or anything you want. Just quickly, what species is your organization? What is it? I can't make it out.
Donkey.
A donkey.
Yeah. Okay. And you mean the other one?
Okay. Think of what's invested with all these metaphors. Like when you say donkey, think of what's something else.
A camel.
A camel. Goes long, long time without water. Can last without resources. It can last for a long time without resources. Or suddenly it takes them all in. I mean, you got all these metaphors. Anybody else?
Gerbil.
Which?
Gerbil.
A gerbil. Okay. Why?
Wow.
Why is gerbil?
Running perpetually.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, or a rat in a cage or something. Okay, anybody else? I mean, there's 35 people in this room, and we'll have 35 or 50 or 100 different species, right? Everybody's got a different image of what your organization is. Organizations vary enormously. There's just a terrific variety of organizations. So if I go into your organization and I say, quick, give me a picture of this place. If I go into a company and say, quick, give me a picture of this place. If I go into McGill University, if I go into almost anywhere and say, quick, give me a picture of this place, this is almost always what I'm going to get. That's the only thing that's handy. Nobody has another chart that shows it differently, or not nobody, but it's rare. Okay? Now, have a look at that for a second. We've got top management, middle management, and bottom management, right? You say top management? Do you say middle management? You say bottom management? How come nobody says bottom management? Everybody says top management, and lots of people say middle. How come nobody says bottom management? I mean, if you've got top, then you must have bottom, right? And the people who are there at the bottom are kind of saying, well, if we're bottom management, you know, they won't even say it. They'll say first line or operating or whatever it is, but they'll never say bottom management, which tells you something about top management, which is, as it's a metaphor. And it's not a very good metaphor at that. What's top about top management? What's top about top management? Top of the salary scale? Okay. Top of the building? In business, usually, not in healthcare. Usually in hospitals, the executive director sits on the main floor near the door so they can get away quickly, I think. To escape. First of all, the buildings aren't that high anyway, but in business, of course, if you're top management, you're sitting on the 80th floor, right? You're like on top. Now, if you're running the Royal Bank of Canada or something, and you're sitting on, I don't know what it is, but let's say you're sitting on the 80th floor in Toronto, you have a clerk in a bank in Calgary that's much higher than the top management. That clerk in Calgary is like thousands of feet higher than the, I don't know how high Calgary is, but let's say Denver. You've got a branch in Denver, Colorado. That clerk is sitting at 5,000 feet, and you're the top management in New York, and you're sitting at 500 feet or 1,000 feet or something like that. So it's a metaphor, and it's a destructive metaphor. Because it implies, when you say top management, it's kind of like they're up there. Well, if you're trying to manage a place, namely, you know, and they're sort of kind of, everyone's down there, like, is that a way to manage a place? I mean, you just, it disconnects you.
I think what it means by top manager is the most responsible manager for the organization.
Yeah.
I think this is what it means.
Yeah, it's the person who, the buck stops here. It's the person who's most responsible. But still the word top takes it beyond that. The word top still implies on the top, being on top. You know, there's an English expression to be on top of things, meaning to know what's going on. The worst place to be on top of things is to see yourself on top of the organization. That's the least easy way to see what's happening at the base. The bottom is the base. The bottom is what's happening. The bottom is where people are operating. The bottom is where community services are given, you know, and so on and so forth. The bottom is where pharmaceuticals are manufactured and all these different things. So the bottom is where things happen. The top is kind of abstractions. Now, watch this very carefully, and maybe we'll focus in on that. So this is an organization. I'm going to show you a reorganization. Okay? I want you to watch very carefully. Okay? An organization, a reorganization. You got it? An organization, a reorganization. In other words, what we do is we change a few names, we shift people around in boxes, we keep this basic idea, but you know, this person goes there, and that person goes here, and that person goes there, and we think we've reorganized. But we haven't reorganized our heads because we still have this concept of what the organization is. That doesn't change. Shifting people around. You know why there's so much reorganization going on? Because it's the easiest thing to do. It's the easiest thing to do. All you have to do is sit down. It's like changing the cabinet in a government, you know. The prime minister sits there and moves this one here, this one there, this one there. Done. So simple. Same thing with a reorganization. So simple. Imagine reorganizing without changing the chart. Imagine if I said to you, reorganize, but you can't change the chart. Okay? Think of a geographic reorganization. Change who sits next to who. That could have a much more profound effect on how the place works than this kind of reorganization, because now what you're doing is encouraging people to talk to each other. You know, if all the marketing people are sitting in one place and all the manufacturing people are sitting in another place, they're not going to talk to each other. But if you reorganize and mix them all up, they'll start talking to each other, because that's who they see at the coffee machine. So there are different ways of doing this. Okay. Okay, we all know about silos in organizations, right? That all the surgeons kind of communicate with the surgeons. And the silos in healthcare are much stronger than in other organizations, because in other organizations, the silos are determined by the chart. But in healthcare, particularly among physicians, the silos are determined by a different kind of status hierarchy, a different kind of hierarchy. It's not a hierarchy of authority, it's a hierarchy of status. So you have interns, and then you have residents, and then you have the regular physicians, and then you have the ones who publish more, and so on and so forth. So next to this authority hierarchy that flows down from the top, so-called, you have a status hierarchy that flows up from the bottom. So the top of the status hierarchy among professionals, among physicians, is who publishes the most, or who does the best operations, or who knows the mayor, or God knows what it is. But there's all kinds of sort of status things going on. So you've got that. But what we don't talk about are slabs in organizations. So what's a slab? A slab is simply a level of in the hierarchy. And very often the slabs are actual floors. The slabs really are concrete. So this is the ground floor, second floor, third floor, fourth floor, and so on. And I remember a company I knew in Prague where the people in that company used to refer to the seventh floor. The seventh floor was their word for this mysterious thing of a few of the most senior managers who talked only to each other or mostly to each other on the seventh floor while everybody else was scurrying around carrying out their orders. Okay, so if you're managing, there's been lots of talk about how you deal with the silos and how you get people to communicate across the silos, but we need to get people to communicate through the floors. You know, if you're in an organization in a big flat area, people will walk quite far to find someone else. But if there's floors, they won't go up and down the stairs or the elevator. They're much more reluctant. It's much easier to create communication in a horizontal environment than it is in a vertical, literally a vertical environment. People just don't like to go up and down stairs. Sears used to have its headquarters, the retail firm used to have its headquarters in what was then in Chicago the highest building in the world. And they got out of it because the chief executive said we became a vertical culture. People just weren't changing floors. So, okay. Well, let's say this. We'll do this later. So, this is the cow that Leslie, you might want to focus in on that. This is the cow that Leslie talked about. This is from an ad for SAP Canada, which is a world-famous software company, you know well. And the ad said this. This is not a cow. You remember the famous painting of a pipe that shows a pipe and says, this is not a pipe? Because it's a painting of a pipe. It's not a pipe. It's a painting. Well, this is not a cow. This is not a cow. This is an organization chart that shows the different parts of a cow. And in a real cow, the parts aren't aware that they're parts. They don't have trouble sharing information. They smoothly and naturally work together as one unit, as a cow. And you have only one question to answer. Do you want your organization to work like a chart or a cow? Now, that's a very serious question, because cows can do it, and everyone in this room can do it. We can each do it individually. You know, I don't know how you people know better than I do, but my brain is not giving instructions to everything to coordinate. You know, my liver can figure out how to coordinate with my kidneys, and my heart can figure out how to coordinate with my lungs. And, you know, we have things that do that. We have blood flowing through our veins. That helps to coordinate. We have nerve systems. We have a certain spirit within our bodies and so on. So we have all these different mechanisms for enabling us to work like a cow. We work just as well as a cow if we're healthy. Right? When we get together socially, like in this classroom, it becomes much more complicated. Now, in this classroom, it actually works very well, because we're 35 people, there's nobody in charge. It's not, I mean, Leslie's in charge, but Leslie's not kind of giving everybody orders, now learn this, now forget this, now think of this, and so on. We're very interactive, like yesterday. We're very interactive, and so we function sort of like a cow. There was somebody in our other program in the IMPM, the International Masters in Practicing Management, the business version, which runs a module in India. And this was actually quite interesting. He was a vice president of an American company, and he wrote an article about this that appeared in The Economist. I should have the slide up there, but the article appeared in The Economist, and he was telling the story about how when they were being shown Bangalore, and they were walking around Bangalore and kind of being shown it, they got to an intersection, they had to cross the street. Except if you've ever been to India, the cars were coming, everything was coming, cars, motorcycles, you know, rickshaws, auto rickshaws, everything's coming full blast, nonstop. And how are they going to get across the street? And the guy who was organizing them said, we will walk like a cow. Because a lot of cows in India, and cows kind of amble with some kind of intention. And as a cow goes through this traffic, everybody knows to go around it. So, and they don't go around killing cows that way. And so What he had them doing was walking across the street like a cow. He said, all get together, we're going to move as one, and we're going to cross the street like a cow. And they crossed the street, and nobody killed them, and it worked. And that's the way, if you think about it, that's the way this program works, the IMHL, that's the way the IMPM works. We're much more interested in communityship, and I've said this over and over again, we're much more interested in communityship than we are in leadership. Leadership's important, but leadership is individual, and communityship is working like a cow. Communityship is how you get organizations to function coherently and together. So how do you get your organization working like a cow is a serious question. And later, we're going to end with a workshop on how do you do that. Okay. Let me suggest there are four different ways to see organizations, to think of organizations, to perceive organizations. The first one is as a chain, a sequence of activities. First you do one, then you do the second, then you do the third, then you do the fourth, then you do the fifth. Okay? And then what you do is you put a, that's the hierarchy, that's the chain of work, the chain of activity, and then you put a chain of command on top of it. So you have a manager for every activity and a manager for every manager. So we build a chain of authority on top of a chain of operations. Now, think in your own organizations of what works like a chain. Are there things that come to mind? For example, I guess when you're prepping someone for surgery, there's a chain of activities, right? From the pre-op through the organizing of it all, through the staff coming together, and it all kind of flows until the operation's over, and then you've got post-op, right? So you've got a kind of linear chain. But does a hospital look like a chain? Does a hospital work like a chain? If you think about it, not at all. So let's try some other ways of looking at it. This is the organization as a hub. Okay? Here you don't have top management, you have central management. And then you have connecting management, and then you have operating management. Okay? The most obvious example of a hub is an airport. Right? An airport is a hub. They use that word in the sense that planes come in and planes go out. They don't put the management at the center necessarily, but the whole organization works like a hub. A hospital works like a hub, if you think about it. And I'm not referring to the central management. I'm referring to the physical facility. The hospital is there. Patients are coming in every which way. They're coming in through emergency. They're coming in through the doors, wherever they're coming in. And they're going out, back out after they're done with the treatments, right? So a hospital kind of looks like a hub. And now, just metaphorically, you're moving away from the idea of a chain with management on top to a hub with management in the center. Very different view. Here's a third view. This is as a web. What's a web? A web means everybody's interacting every which way. I mean, like the World Wide Web or like the internet or whatever. Nobody's managing the flow of information through the internet. It's a web. And think of a research group. You've got six or eight people working on research, and they don't work as a chain. They don't work as a hub. They themselves work as a web. They're interacting every which way. They're exchanging information. Things are happening. Remember back to the double helix film we saw in the first module. I think you saw it in the first module, right? If I remember correctly. And they were working as a kind of a web. They were sort of interacting, all of them, in different ways. You can see this in hospitals where, particularly in research, sometimes, but also when there's a kind of very difficult case where nobody knows what the heck to do, you might get three or four physicians, nurses, physios, whatever it is, around the patient trying to figure out what should we do now. Or maybe in a meeting room. But that's working as a web. You're interacting, you're sharing ideas, you're trying hypotheses, you're saying, how do we deal with this? Okay? And then some organizations work as sets. Everybody's working separately. Go around this building, like any other business school, like any other university department. Somebody's teaching marketing in that room. Somebody's teaching strategy in that room. Somebody's teaching organizational behavior over there.
And they have almost nothing to do with each other. They have almost nothing to do with each other. How do they coordinate? Because the marketing person knows what to expect of the strategy person. Okay? They have more or less idea of what each one is teaching. So the marketing guy can say, well, as you learned about such and such in the strategy course. Okay, but let me give you a better example. One of my doctoral students years ago observed a five-hour open heart operation in which the surgeon and the anesthetist didn't talk to each other for 5 hours. And yet very, very tightly coordinated. Eh? They can't work randomly. Their work is extremely tightly coordinated. And yet they don't have to talk to each other. Why? Because they know exactly what the protocols are, unless there's a crisis, something goes wrong. But if things go according to plan, they know what to expect of the other. You sit 80 people on a stage and playing as an orchestra, and they are coordinating spectacularly. All right? Out of these different instruments, these different people come beautifully coordinated music. And you know who's coordinating it? Beethoven. Beethoven is coordinating it because he wrote all the instructions, all the notes for every single instrument. And so we watch. I'm always amused watching orchestra conductors because they're waving their hands and it's a great big show. But you know, most of that coordination has nothing to do with the conductor. It has to do with Beethoven. Beethoven's the one who's making sure they're coordinating in some kind of coherent way. Watch a conductor in performance. And watch a conductor in rehearsal, which I did. And the conductor in performance is performing himself or herself. They're performing with the arms waving. It's all very dramatic. But in rehearsal, I saw a great violinist as a guest conductor during rehearsals, and he was mostly playing his violin. Every once in a while, he'd go like that, and they'd come in, and then he plays violin, and at one point he might stop and say, hey, I do this one a little slower, or with the strings, please do it this way, or whatever, and then he'd go back and play his violin, and so on. He wasn't. So in certain organizations, people work as a set. And what I'm going to come to in a minute is that most of you work this way. You don't work as a chain. You don't work as a hub. You don't work as a web. You work as a set. You're independent. And look at what I'm doing now. Here, same thing. I'm working independently. Leslie's here. Sometimes there's other faculty here. But it's my session. And I'm doing it independently. I know what else is coming. I can tell you how this is different from tomorrow or what yesterday or what we're going to do tomorrow and all that. But I'm working as a set. So bear in mind... which is most common in your organization? If you think, well, there's two questions. How do you function? Do you function in a chain? Do you function around a hub? Do you function within a set, or within a web, or do you function as a part of, as an element in a set? Let's do a quick, how many people think they function in a kind of chain of activities? Okay. And why, for example? Oh, because you're in the pharmaceutical business, so you're part of a sequence of...
Yeah, early discovery, and yeah, I would view it more as a chain than as a set. I think there's a lot of integration of the work across early discovery, because, research, preclinical, non-clinical to clinical, so
yeah.
I think it's probably more of a chain, but...
Yeah, so it's a very particular case. By the way, is the mic... You get it? Okay. So, what about us in a chain? Around a hub? Who sees yourself as part of either the center of a hub or part of a hub? Anybody see themselves that way? And within a web?
Regarding the hub, I think that the difference between the chain system and the hub system is very minute, because you can arrange your different branches into different directions around the top management, and the hub essentially sort of functions like that. Maybe some different branches can interact, but that's not prevented in a chain organization either. So I'm having trouble really seeing a significant nuance between both.
Well, you can have combinations. For example, in airline manufacturing, we once described it as a chain of hubs. In other words, design to production and so on to delivery, and even within design, you've got all kinds of hubs or all kinds of webs, in that case sometimes, sort of working within groups, but the web or the hub is part of a chain that goes from beginning to end. So you're starting with design, you're going through manufacturing of parts, then you're going through assembly, and so on. Even the assembly process is in automobile manufacturing, it's a classic chain, right? The car moves down the chain, and people come in and put in the doors and the windows and all that. Classically, I think some of that's changed, but classically, the way you manufactured an airplane, it was too big to move it down, so you left it in one place, it was the hub, and everybody came to it. So there were two different ways. You could assemble cars that way. You could assemble cars. You could have the car sitting there and everybody coming to it. It wouldn't make much sense. But you could do it as a hub, but you don't. You do it as a chain. I think now there's some airplane manufacturers also done as a chain. So these things can all mix up. I did an article once that you can find or we can circulate called Organigraphs, which is instead of showing organizations as charts, we show them as organigraphs, flows of information, flows of work through the organization, just to see whether they're hubs or chains or sets.
Question from somebody online.
Go ahead.
Am I? Hi. We have a question from somebody online. It's one of our alums in New Hampshire, and she's asking, what about an organization with a set, hub, and chain? For example, the innovative area that interfaces with the performance engine.
I'm not sure about what the performance engine means, but I do agree. If you start probing into some organizations, you're going to find all kinds. If you go into a classic manufacturing operation like an automobile assembly plant, and then you go watch how the accounting department works, you might see it working as a set or as a hub or something else. So you can get all those combinations for sure. And the interesting thing is to use this as a vocabulary to figure out what's going on in your own organization.
So when you describe... Well, what strikes me is that when you describe the set, you say that so people work independently but know what everyone else is doing.
Yeah.
And I think that if we're honest in most organizations, we,
we <don't>.
Believe that we know what everyone else is doing, and that is completely not the case.
Yeah.
So we're actually working in set, ignoring our coworkers and ignoring the work. Not ignoring like we're not paying attention, but we just have no idea who's doing what.
Yeah, so to take my own example, if marketing assumes they know what strategy is doing, the marketing professor knows what the strategy professor is doing. He may know what the strategy professor did when he was studying himself and did a course in strategy, but he may never have learned anything since. Absolutely, it's a big problem. The bigger problem is not that they don't know what they're doing, they know only superficially what they're doing. And this is a key thing in any professional organization. If people fall into the pigeonholes, you know, if I've got a ruptured appendix and everybody knows how to deal with a ruptured appendix and I'm diagnosed properly and all that, all the protocols go in and so on. But if I've got some condition down there that nobody can figure out what it is, then they have to start talking to each other as a web. And they're not used to talking to each other. It's a huge problem in medicine and in many organizations that people who are used to coordinating automatically don't know how to get together and coordinate. And in the funny part in medicine is you can have a sequence of five different doctors dealing with you, and they're all passing little sheets of paper between them that say, looks like a ruptured appendix or God knows what, and the other one scribbles back a few other words, and they assume that's coordinating. If you could get them all in one room around the patient, suddenly they could say, hey, wait a minute, what about this? And yeah, that's a good idea. We need that interaction.
I don't want to dominate the discussion, but it makes me think of the question that I have, like in osteopathy, working with doctors, most of the time I wonder if it's really necessary for us to know about every other profession. So I think that the conclusion that I'm coming to is that most of the time we can work independently, but at some point we're going to have to know what other people do in case we have that special case where it goes beyond what we can do. I think that's
exactly. I'm saying the same thing. As long as it fits the standard protocols and the standard diagnosis and the pigeonhole, it's all fine. Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So, Yogi Berra. Anybody know Yogi Berra? Yogi Berra was the catcher for the New York Yankees. Yogi Bear was named after Yogi Berra, not the other way around. But Yogi Berra was the catcher for the New York Yankees and then became manager. And he used to say all these funny things like, when you come to the fork in the road, take it. Or that restaurant is so popular that nobody goes there anymore. All kinds of, it was deja vu all over again. He said all these crazy things. But anyway, and he was serious about these things. But when one day when they asked him if he wanted his pizza cut in four pieces or six, he said, you better make it four, I can't eat six pieces. So figuring you can't handle six kinds of organizations, I'm going to show you four, if that's okay. And that way you can handle it. Four big ones instead of six smaller ones. So one is for startup and turnaround. These are species of organizations. This is like the bears and the beavers, okay? So the first one is for startup and turnaround, okay? I call it the entrepreneurial organization. Very leader-centered. Very leader-centered. The second is for mass production, like making assembling automobiles or making McDonald's hamburgers or whatever, and that's I call machine organization. The third one is for professional expertise, like hospitals, universities, accounting firms, whatever, and I call that the professional organization. And the fourth one is for innovation, for creativity. This would be like advertising agencies or research groups, really creative research groups, and so on. And this I call project organization or innovative organization or adhocracy. Instead of bureaucracy, it's adhocracy. So I put them on this chart like this. So machine organization is the chain organization. It's the hierarchical organization. The entrepreneurial organization is the hub centered around the leader. Very, very leader-oriented. The professional organization tends to work in sets where people work rather independently of each other. And that's the great strength of healthcare and the great weakness of healthcare. When we fit into the categories, it's fantastic. When we don't fit into the categories, it can be terrifying because they're not used to talking to each other in a flexible way. And the fourth one, call it adhocracy or innovative or project organization, that's a web kind of organization. Two of these are centralized, this one around the leader, this one around the hierarchy. Two of these are decentralized. They're both organizations of experts, but here the experts work alone, and here the experts work together. So this is decentralized. These two are dynamic, very flexible. One person can change the organization in an instant. And this one is always changing, always changing. Whereas these two are stable. So I'll give you an example, and somebody kind of used something like this yesterday, and I'll use it in your own context. Imagine being wheeled into an operating room, and the nurse says, nothing to worry about, this is a really creative surgeon. Okay, and it's kind of like, well, do you have a, I don't want a really creative surgeon, I want a surgeon who's done this operation 500 times. Okay, so on the other hand, if you're in trouble in that operating room, you do want a creative surgeon, obviously. Whereas here, the experts are working together, and these are very creative organizations, but try and keep them sort of organized or keep their costs down, and good luck. So tell me, look at that and tell me what happened with that symphony orchestra, that MBA student who studied the symphony orchestra. What was going on this chart? Nobody knows? What kind of an organization was he in?
Like a
Of these four, which is the closest to what he was in? Huh? Professional. Yeah, there's a kind of professional. All the very, very highly trained. These are professional, very, very highly trained, but all playing to their own score. They're all playing to what Beethoven wrote for them to play. So in a sense, they were professional. But being a good MBA student, what was he trained to understand? He was trained to understand machine organizations. About 90, I would guesstimate 80 to 90% of everything that's ever been written about machine about organizations is actually about machine organizations. The assumption is that that's the way everybody should organize. It's like the biologist going out and saying they should all be like bears and live in caves and so on. They should all be like bears. Every organization, most of what's written is about how to be a better machine organization. You've seen it all. Tighter systems, closer control, cut the salaries, keep the costs low, program everybody's job down to the letter, organize everything, measure everything in sight. All those things are about machine organizations, every one of them. Or some of that literature is about how to soften the worst elements of it. As somebody once put it, they referred to the HR, the human resource department, as the maintenance crew for the human machinery. Kind of how do you stop people from hating the place so much because it's so programmed. But of course, we've got all kinds of other organizations kicking around that can't be managed like that. But if you look at what's taught in business schools, and if you read what's in Harvard Business Review or most of the management journals and management magazines, they're all about tightening up, getting better systems, measuring better, organizing tighter, all those kinds of things. Most of what they do, less today than before, but most of what they do is about that. And it's very destructive. It's particularly destructive for you people when governments or HMOs or insurance companies start telling hospitals that they better get organized, meaning more machine-like. Yeah?
I'm wondering if you can unpack...
Wait, take a...
I'm wondering if you can unpack a little bit more... Can you unpack a little bit more... your rationale for calling hospitals professional organizations or set-like organizations? Because certainly I agree that some of those who work in hospitals, physicians being perhaps a good example, are working in sets,
right,
where doctors are essentially working independently of one another. But I'd argue all of these different models exist in various ways within a hospital organization, which is one of the reasons I would argue that hospitals so often are dysfunctional, is that you have the professional staff of a hospital working in their sets, but you have the CEO and leadership of the corporate hospital entity working in more an entrepreneurial model. Yep. You have a bunch of systems within the hospital that have to communicate with each other that have follow more a machine
cafeteria
kind of thing. And then you have working groups within things that are ad hocracies.
Yep. Like research teams.
Can you comment on that a little bit more and just hospitals generally? Because I think the trap we fall into is seeing as hospitals as the professionals who work in them and not a broader...
Yeah, yesterday I talked about splitters and lumpers. Splitters are people... What you're doing is splitting. You're looking at the kind of nuances of it. I'm lumping. I'm saying, look, you got these four categories. Don't confuse me with the facts. And the fact is it's both splitting and lumping. You're absolutely correct, and you're correct about almost any organization, any serious-sized organization. You will find elements of all of them in all those organizations. The question is what dominates? The question is what's the philosophy that dominates? And in a hospital, I would argue that it's that that's dominant. No matter how much of the rest you have, the whole place is guided by the fact that the people who have the influence and are doing the basic work, the physicians and the nurses too, and all the other professionals as well, are working in that kind of way. And what that leads to is what I call a kind of contamination. If you look at parts, I'll try a hypothesis which is silly and probably doesn't work, but the cafeteria runs like a machine, right? The cafeteria doesn't run like a bunch of professionals. It runs, and it's even got a, you know, a chain where you go in and you take your food in sequence and all that's very chain-like. I would argue that cafeterias in hospitals are probably swaying a little bit more to this model simply because it's the model they see around them. Okay? In other words, that's the dominant model. Just like if you go into McDonald's, that's the dominant model. You're going to see this in its advertising campaigns and in new product introductions and so on. You will see the others. But often, one dominates. And the danger is contamination. The danger is that McDonald's might try and run its research lab, you know, McDonald's might try and run its research lab kind of more like a machine just because it's McDonald's and that's the way they think. Okay? So the key to get to your point, David, and I think it's the key point, is that how do you function effectively when you've got a mix of these different things? And one part of that answer is understand what's going on. Understand that there's an imperative to manage surgery in a particular way, and there's an imperative to manage the cafeteria in a different way, and understand the dynamic. Understand what's going on in the place.
But part of the problem I see is that you're asking systems that have that sort of professional
imperative
to actually do processes that are machine driven.
Yeah.
So the discharge planning process from a hospital involves all these professionals who work independently, but it's a very distinct process with steps that need coordination.
Yeah.
And because it's organized in that professional way, it doesn't happen effectively.
It's a very good example. It's a perfect example that the things that can't, where you can't use that model, it interferes with their ability to do what they have to do because they need to talk to each other much more and they need much more interaction. Yeah, and I think that's the purpose of what I'm doing today, is to convey sort of these different forms and how they work together and how they work apart and how you have to understand these things. Because this isn't built into the theory I'm presenting. This is built into the reality of how these organizations work. And so if you're going to get around it, you're going to understand why these things are happening and realize that you've got to function differently under different circumstances. So you kind of have little pieces of paper going between this charge to an old people's home, and here I send you a little piece of paper and you send me back, just like physicians communicate with each other, you know, with their categories. So an excellent point, and a point that you have to deal with and live with.
None of these fully applies to a hospital is, I think, there's one dimension lacking in this chart, and every single one of these is flat, but in a hospital setting, it's a combination of all these things, and it's more three-dimensional. As Dave was saying, a patient comes in, he's seen, he's hospitalized, he's discharged, that's machine-like. Professionals are working in silos to take care of an injury or whatnot. It's entrepreneurial because your consultant comes to the patient, sees them, then leaves. Adhocracy because you're communicating with other teams.
Yeah.
None of these, you need to have like a pop-up on this slide that makes it three-dimensional, because otherwise you can't just apply just one of these and ask which our organization is.
Well, my
doesn't
answer,
work.
My answer to that is, because they're splitting, do you ignore lumping? In other words, because these nuances are taking place, because these different things are happening, is it not useful to talk about the categories? Is it not useful to say one organization tends to be, if you compare a hospital with a McDonald's fast food chain, it'll be absolutely evident from the second you walk in that those are very different places. Those are two different species of organizations, and one is very machine-like and the other is very professional-like. That doesn't mean other things aren't going on. That doesn't mean you have to deal with the other things that are going on. Of course you do. In other words, you've got a split and you've got a lump, and I'm proposing lumping. Some people are very uncomfortable with lumping. Other people are very uncomfortable with splitting.
I'm not uncomfortable with splitting, but I think it's the end result of isolating one dimension only is that we're not going to be able to appreciate the big picture. It's just like seeing a patient without his comorbidities.
Yeah, and let me tell you, years ago, one of my doctoral students who was listening to this said, are you playing jigsaw puzzle with these things, or are you playing Lego? Okay, and I thought it's a really interesting question. In other words, my conclusion was I'm playing jigsaw puzzle in the Chinese way, not one flat image, but where you can put the blocks together to make about four or five images. Okay, that's the game I'm playing. But then I thought Lego is really interesting, that you take these four forms, and each of these forms is represented by a force. So this is the force for centralizing around. This is the force for leadership. This is the force for innovation. This is the force for proficiency, and this is the force for efficiency. Okay? And every organization has to cater to those four forces. Okay? So you could start to say, all right, we use these as building blocks. What should be more machine-like? What should be more entrepreneurial? What part should be more adhocracy? What part should be more machine-like? So you go into the cafeteria, and you're not going to say, well, we'll run the cafeteria like we run the surgical rooms. You're not going to say, we'll run the surgical rooms like we run the cafeteria. You can start to see these as blocks that you put together, and that's the compromise position between splitting and lumping. You're using both. But don't reject the lumping. I'm a consummate lumper. I love categories, but I should have been a physician, I guess. But okay. So we could talk a bit about each. I won't spend a lot of time, but just to talk quickly about each. The entrepreneurial organization. If you want a track team to win the high jump, you find one person who can jump 7 feet, not seven people who can each jump 1 foot. But of course, if we have to change a light bulb that's 15 feet high, we might have to get on each other's shoulders and team up. So this is the motto of the entrepreneurial organization: find the leader who can do it all. And these organizations, just quickly, they're hubs, they're leader-driven, they're centralized, they're quite simple, they're very responsive. As long as the leader is responsive, the organization is responsive. The trouble with this organization is the leader gets hit by a truck and you're dead. The whole place is dead because suddenly it's like, what do we do? I remember once meeting someone from Disney, not long after Disney himself died, and he says, you know what we do when we have a big problem? We say, what would Walt have done? What would Walt Disney have done? In other words, they still needed that leader. Eventually, they grew past it. So the weakness is very restricted, but very powerful. I mean, look at Apple. I mean, Apple had lots of hubs and lots of webs and lots of things going on. But boy, Steve Jobs was front and center in that organization. Absolutely no question. So that was an entrepreneurial organization. The machine organization in the automobile business, uncertainty is the biggest enemy. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? Uncertainty is the enemy, not competition or whatever. So these are chain organizations, very formalized, very specialized, very centralized, very, very stable, efficient, reliable, precise. You go into a hotel and you don't want to lift up the pillow and a jack-in-the-box jumps up and says, surprise, welcome to the hotel. I'm not amused, you know. But if I ask for a wake-up call at 8 and they call it 8:03, it's kind of like, I said 8, I didn't say 8:03. We want these organizations to be very, very precise. And think of all the organizations that we expect to be very, very precise. Okay? The weakness, obviously, is very impersonal, very inflexible, very obsessed with control. That's the problem in the machine organization. Through the control process, we can stop managers falling in love with their businesses. Imagine somebody saying that. But that's the machine organization. the professional organization. The most powerful drive in the ascent of man is his pleasure in his own skill. He loves to do what he does well, and having done it, he loves to do it better. That's what drives professionals. They want to do it better and better and better and better. That's what they want to do. Skill-driven, works as a set, decentralized because every professional has control over his or her own work, very dedicated. The professional staff could be very conflictive, sometimes not very adaptable, and disloyal, and also lose track of things. You know, the operation was a success, but the patient unfortunately died. This is the researchers talking, saying, you know, we made a great breakthrough. Unfortunately, we lost the patient. So you get problems. Did I ever tell you about the liver transplant surgeon? A friend of mine studied liver transplant surgeon in England, and he transplanted 10 livers. This is early on in liver transplanting, and he transplanted 10 patients with liver problems. Three of them died, 7 survived. Of the 7 who survived, one's new liver was failing and they had to have another operation. Of the others, what was it? Two or three couldn't go back to work. They survived, but they couldn't function. 3 were able to resume normal lives. So he asked the surgeon what his performance was, and the surgeon said 7 out of 10. He said, in fact, when I replant the patient whose liver is failing, it'll be 8 out of 11. Because he doesn't count people, he counts livers. Okay? Then he asked another physician, she had had cancer earlier, and situation she was in brought her cancer back and she wasn't going to survive. Another physician said 6 out of 10, he never should have transplanted the woman who had had the cancer. The administrators in the hospital, the nurses who knew the patients best said 3 out of 10 because some of those transplanted people were not living very good lives. Now, what's the right answer? Evidence, it's evidence, right? Perfect, I gave you all the evidence. It's all there. You have all the evidence. What's the answer? Take your pick. Depends what you're studying. Depends what you want. There's no right answer. It's not 3 out of 10 or 7 out of 10 or 8 out of 11. It's whatever you're interested in looking at. So bear that in mind. And this is the problem with the surgeon himself, who counts livers, not people. So an actuary is someone who would have been an accountant, but he couldn't stand the excitement. This is the sort of the professional organization. An expert, like all of you and me, an expert is someone who knows more and more about less and less until eventually he knows everything about nothing. And this is back to the comment about we have to know about what other people are doing, but how much can we know? So an expert knows everything about nothing. A manager is someone who knows less and less about more and more until finally he or she knows nothing about everything. And what happens when these two meet? Well, you deal with that every day on one end or the other or both ends of that issue, right? Okay. The adhocracy organization. The mind of the craftsman, that's the professional, dwells on what he knows, and he delights to use and display his knowledge. It's masculine because these are old quotes, and that's the way they said them. The investigator's mind dwells on the unknown and puzzling, and his eagerness is often towards displaying doubts and difficulties. So the mindset of the adhocracy person, different from the mindset of the professional organization person. These aren't just organization types. These are species and their cultures. The professional culture is different from the entrepreneurial culture, which is different from the adhocracy culture and so on. That's why I disagree with you, because the cultures, some organizations are mixed, completely mixed. Pharmaceutical companies are an interesting example because, as I see it, I don't know if you'd agree, but as I see it, the research is much more like adhocracy, or should be. Development is much more professional. Manufacturing is much more machine, and marketing, I would argue marketing is probably professional or machine as well. So you've got an even mix. In fact, the more pharmaceutical companies emphasize promotion and development, the weaker they get at research. Because research is the tricky one. The adhocracy part of it is tricky when your mentality is around marketing and promotion. So, I don't know if you see that, but... Okay. So, project-driven, the adhocracy, decentralized, fluid, teamwork, very innovative, very flexible, but not very efficient. They're not efficient. If you make these organizations efficient, you kill them. Because they need that flexibility to probe. You've been in other programs. You've been in other educational programs, bachelor's degrees, whatever. I would argue that those were almost certainly professional type organizations, in the sense that the professor came in, gave a lecture, another professor came in, gave another lecture. Everything was chopped up nice and neatly. The IMHL, like the IMPM, is really much more like adhocracy. We're adapting and changing and doing things and communicating and working around the tables and problem solving, and we're doing that all the time. It's one of the few programs where you see so many faculties, the only program. I taught for 25 years, whatever, in regular programs. Never had another professor in my classroom, never had a dean in my classroom. This classroom, on average, I would say, has 4 or 5 faculty members in this room almost all the time. And we're just interacting, communicating, problem solving, and so on.
As I've been listening, I've been trying to see what the dominant culture of my organization is, like how I would describe it. Mm-hmm. I'm having a hard time. I think it sounds like an adhocracy because there's a lot of innovation going on, especially underground, and people have to respond, and even the systems within the system have to respond rapidly.
Yeah.
But it's definitely, there's a lot of bureaucracy as well.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure, so it's kind of like a web, but there is a central command.
Yep.
So I don't know if governments tend to be like that, or government organizations tend to be like
that. I think there's always a force in government that worries about being embarrassed or you know, things going wrong and being blamed and all that kind of thing. I think what you have to do, and this is what we'll do in a few minutes, but I think what you have to do is a couple of things. You have to start by saying, let's use this vocabulary to understand what's going on. Okay? And you just did that. In a way. You said, look, we got this over here and this over there. Then the second question is it functional? Are some of the things going on, should they go on? You get organizations that are hybrids. Pharmaceutical companies are hybrids. They can't be just adhocracy or just machine or just professional. I think development is largely professional. Research is largely adhocracy and so on. It's functional to be a hybrid because they can't do anything else. That's the way they have to operate. But you have to look at other organizations and saying, is every element of this hybrid really necessary? And I would argue, and I think you sort of implied it, I would argue that very often people will take power because they're in charge, but they shouldn't. They should allow much more decentralization of authority. So it's a diagnostic tool, basically. This is a nice quote for adhocracy. It's also simple, just change your concept of the world. This is from Shogun, where a British... What's that? Yeah. You want to say something?
Question.
What?
Wait.
Okay.
You need that.
My question is like...
I don't think it's working.
Is it open?
Yeah, I have a question. I agree that the health system is working in a professional kind of, you know, that professionalism is almost or the dominant philosophy which is behind the health system. But my question is, it really the professional philosophy can be expressed as a set? I mean, you were explaining that you were standing and teaching us. And, you know, you can do it even, you know, that the other people are around, but you can do your own job. But really, the health system is not like that most often, because there are situations, for example, I work in the emergency room, and there are situations where I cannot do myself unless I either the surgeon comes, you know, the other party comes and does his job, or even the porter, unless the patient is moved to other side, I cannot even receive another patient. And there are obstacles where I cannot do, you know, my situation or my work alone. So I don't think that model can explain, you know, the set kind of model.
Absolutely. I mean, your situation is very particular. You're in emergency. You're in the air flying around. You're doing it in Ethiopia. There's a whole set of things that would drive you much more to a kind of an adhocracy kind of basis, or even an entrepreneurial kind of basis in the sense that it kind of focuses around you. But a lot of it has to do with you get on the ground, you find out what's going on, the people are local, they're explaining to you, you're talking, you're interacting, you're figuring out what you have to do and how do you get the things to do it. That's quite different from doing a standard appendectomy, okay, in a big hospital back in the city. So, yeah, there's different situations in medicine. I guess cataracts are probably the ultimate in absolutely, utterly programmed operations. Or the way Scholdeis in Toronto does its hernia operation, very, almost machine-like in a way. That's one extreme. I had a doctoral student who studied sort of four medical specialties, and I think one end, I forget the one, I think it was cataracts was most extreme at one end. I think it was cataracts, and the other end was maybe geriatrics or something, which was lots of interaction. So you get the range in medicine. All I'm saying is that on average, it tends to be closer to a machine model, but it can go on either side of it. So. An emergency is emergency by definition is there may be standard ways and emergency rooms don't quite look as much at adhocracies as they do in the television programs about emergency rooms, because obviously they highlight the dramatic stuff. I assume within a hospital most of the emergency rooms are okay. He's been in an accident, you know, he's broken his leg, you know what to do. But
we have another question. One of our alums, I think he's still in the Philippines, so the people watching this from all around, he's asking, does the mission and vision of a hospital, or I suppose any organization, influence the dominant model of the kind of organization or its function?
Yeah. Because you've got, first of all, the one thing I haven't talked about yet, but I don't think we'll get to it in detail today, is there are other forces in organizations. One is the force of politics breaking apart, and the other is the force of culture bringing people together. And when an organization has a very strong mission, then it makes it easier to deal with things that vary. It makes it easier to deal with hybrid kind of forces, because if everybody is pitching in like, we love this place, you remember the obstetrics ward with the original head nurse, and people loved working there, right? We heard the story in the first module, and people loved working there, and that creates an atmosphere where people cooperate. So that makes a huge difference. It still might be professional-like, but when it has to be adhocracy for some particular reason, it's easier to do when everybody's there pitching in together. So mission, and what was the other, Sam's other?
Does the mission and vision...
Yeah. Well, vision, we'll get to that, unfortunately, not on the screen, but we'll get to that tomorrow, because we'll be talking about vision and strategy tomorrow. So let's save that part for now. So here's all the characteristics of organizations. You've got it all in one chart. If you go back to art, craft, science, the entrepreneurial is obviously largely art. The machine is the science analysis form. The adhocracy is much stronger craft. We'll work it out. We'll solve the problem. We'll figure it out. And professional organizations, I think, sit between the science and the craft. There's a, in other words, to go back to yesterday, sit between evidence and experience.
Are certain types of organizations more linked in terms of their ability to transition from one model to the other? For example, does an adhocracy turn more easily into a machine when necessary, or than does a professional organization? Or are there linkages between these types?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because there's two sides to that. There's two sides to that issue. One side is that it's too natural sometimes, that a lot of organizations just naturally flow towards a machine because they tend to get more centralizing managers. They tend to add measure upon measure upon measure. They hire too many analysts who are doing too much analysis. So there's always a drive towards the machine. Most organizations, almost all organizations, start as entrepreneurial. Because it takes one strong person to create the organization. Whether it's a business organization like Steve Jobs with Apple, or whether it's a not-for-profit organization, there's usually a social entrepreneur or somebody who drives the organization in the early years. But it can't stay there forever. And if it's professional, it'll move toward professional. If it's adhocracy, it'll move towards adhocracy, or else it'll move toward machines. So there are natural flows across that diagram, and there are also dysfunctional flows in those. So yeah, interesting aspect. Okay, so take what time are we supposed to end the recording? About now, or I think because we're going to go into kind of more of a workshop mode. So maybe we'll say goodbye to people out there and.
Before we turn to a commercial announcement, before we go, anyone who's tuned in from out there, thank you for being with us. And if you want a copy, a PDF copy of Henry's slides, please email me. The email was on the beginning. You can go back to the beginning. You know our email at McGill, or you can find it.
IMHL.org.
You can go to IMHL.org. Also, this is recorded so that you can send it to colleagues if you want to copy the link and they can look at it later. And thanks for joining us.
Okay, so take the sheet. You got a sheet of paper. And just put down where you think your organization is, whatever you want to call your organization. Whether it's your own hospital or whether you're part of a bigger organization or whether it's your department, whatever you choose. Where you think you are, and put an arrow where you think you'd be better off. In other words, you may say, we're a total entrepreneurial organization and we really got to move toward professional, whatever it is. So just put that down and put it down and then kind of discuss it around the tables, just a short time. Discuss what you did and where you did, and then we're going to go on to do kind of more stuff. Well,
we're professional. That's how it works.
Yeah.